What's up, guys? Welcome to episode number 8 of the 25 Feet High podcast. Today, we're going to be doing something a little bit different and talking about Zach's hunt that if you watch on our YouTube channel, it just went live. It was a hunt where he didn't actually kill anything, but we're going to talk about kind of what he learned about his experience in going to Mississippi for the opening weekend of their archery season in northern Mississippi. But before we get started with that, we're going to introduce him in just a second. But to start off by thanking all of our listeners. We really appreciate all y'all that tune in and listen to our podcast. And also would like to start off by listing our sponsors. And first off is World Champion Outdoors. World Champion Outdoors is your South Alabama Hoyt & Matthews dealer. Check them out on Facebook at World Champion Outdoors. They carry Hoyt, Matthews, and also a bunch of other hunting supplies, ammo, stuff like that. Check them out. Next up is Black Eagle Arrows. Black Eagle Arrows provides superior arrow technology from the tournament trail to the hunting woods. Black Eagle Arrows have you. Check them out at blackeaglearrows.com. Threads Custom Bowstrings. Threads Custom Bowstrings is family owned and operated, providing fastest turnaround times in the industry on your pre-stretched strings. If you are in the market for a new set of strings, call Threads Custom Bowstrings. Tell them 25 High sent you. And last but not least is Native Sense. Native Sense is truly Alabama owned and farmed deer urine scent company. 100% natural, collected for hunters. Native Sense, we get results. All right, guys, so we're about to get rolling with this thing. Also, this is our very first podcast in our new podcast studio, so we're pretty excited about that, but we're about to get this thing rolling. Welcome to the 25 Feet High podcast. I started hunting at 6 years old, and I can't think of a time I wasn't obsessed with it. My first bow at 4, first deer at 7. I have my dad to thank for getting me into such an amazing sport.
Hunting trip for 25 high today.
And I thank God for this opportunity.
Hunting is so much more than killing an animal. It's about family, friends, and this lifestyle so many of us can never live without. It's about the conservation of not only the wildlife and wild lands we know and love, but also of this culture for generations to come.
I'm so grateful for the Lord allowing me to harvest this beautiful body.
I got a freaking giant bass.
25 feet high, baby. This is awesome.
What's up, Zach?
What's up?
All right, so you went to Mississippi.
Yep.
You didn't kill anything, though.
False. I killed about 7,000 seed ticks. They were freaking everywhere. I'll start this podcast off with an unpaid ad for permethrin, I think is what it's called, and Repel tick spray. Friday, my first day of hunting, I didn't have any kind of spray. I didn't have my thermosol. I didn't have anything. And I just walked in and walked out just, you know, the only protection I had against the elements was snake boots and clothes. And I had so many sea ticks on me that I went to Walmart at 4 a.m. the next morning and sprayed my boots and my pants down with permethrin and then let them dry on my way to the woods and then sprayed down with Repel tick spray, like pretty much everywhere, and I didn't see another sea tick the rest of the trip. So that, if you guys haven't tried that stuff, I highly recommend it if you happen to get into some seed ticks. They were everywhere.
Are you sure that you just didn't become immune to them after the first day?
I may have. I may have about 7 different Lyme's diseases.
Okay.
It was rough.
Tell us something that you learned about this, going on this new thing that you did.
Well, this was really my first, like, excursion to a new area of public land. I've been to, like, North Alabama, but it was a short trip, and I didn't really... I'm still definitely not an expert. I'm nowhere near that. Don't think I ever will be on finding deer and hunting deer. But I feel like this year, after listening to a lot of different podcasts and watching YouTube channels, I know a lot more about... I think I know a lot more about deer and how they use different terrain features and stuff like that. And one of the things I was trying to key in on is how these deer were using the terrain. And I feel like, you know, this area was had a lot of terrain. It's definitely not mountainous, but there's a lot of like deep valleys and high ridges and stuff like that, deep bottoms, creek bottoms and stuff. And I noticed that with no water in those bottoms, those deer weren't using them near as often as they had been in the past, because all the sign I found was really old sign. But what I did learn was these deer like to bed. I found a couple of old beds that hadn't been used in a while, and a couple of trails, quite a bit of trails and stuff leading from points that fed into the bottoms where there were in the same area. Basically what I'm trying to describe is it kind of looks like a snowflake on a map, or like, I don't know, like a bicycle tire maybe, where there's multiple spokes coming off of the high points into the bottoms. And what you want is, or what ideally what happens in that is the deer have multiple places to bed within a small area where they can see down into the bottom, everything down into the bottom. They can hear everything to the left and right. And then behind them, no matter which point they're on, or they base which point they would go to on where the wind is coming from. So let's say if the wind is coming from the north, they like to be on a point that is coming from the north to the south. And the south end is in the bottom that they like to travel. And I noticed a lot of deer trails on different scenarios like that. So that, like, for example, the wind would be coming from the north, and the deer would be able to smell everything from behind it that it can't see, but everything down below it in the bottom it can see. And I noticed, like, a lot of the scenarios where there was that terrain feature, there was a lot of old deer sign. But I think
most of that deer sign was from probably last year's rut or early summer stuff.
Well, not really. I feel like, so a lot of it had like rain in it. And like I mentioned in the video, it hasn't rained in like over a month anywhere in the South pretty much. And so a lot of the sign that I was seeing had rain in it. So I'm assuming when there's water nearby, or the deer don't have to worry about water because what they're eating has got dew on it or whatever, they were using it just like they regularly would be. So this sign was probably from a month ago, you know. And I don't know, as everything dried up, I feel like the deer just sort of moved out of that area. And I feel like if I would have gone towards the river, I may have had more success, because I was hunting near a river bottom.
Looking at it now, if you were to go back and do that exact same thing, would you necessarily make sure that you focus most of your energy toward the actual edge of the river area and stuff like that?
I feel like, well, yeah, I mean, if I would have taken the initiative to actually drive down one of the roads that goes just about to the river bottom and scouted that area more, I may have seen a lot more deer sign. I mean, I didn't go down there. It was just out of laziness, I guess. But
well, it's out of the not having time to, like, you only had 3 days.
Really 2.5. And really, I only hunted 2 because Sunday morning it was pouring rain.
Yeah, you got rained out of Sunday. So it's really hard to go into those areas. I think that what you did was a good step toward if you go back later this year. If you're being able to look back, if we get a bunch of rain in between now and the next time you go back, then going back to that area, the area that you were in necessarily could be a good thing. After you get some rain, you had a lot of acres and stuff like that, and those are gonna sit for a while since there's not much deer movement through there. They'll probably actually rot before.
Yeah,
deer move back in there and stuff. But I mean, like I said, we hadn't had, but down here it rained Friday, I think it was, for like an hour, and it was bad. It was bad weather, but it rained for like an hour, and that's all the rain that we've had. And
it did not rain one drop in our area the entire month of September.
Yeah.
So, but another thing I wanted to kind of point out as far as the acorns. I was thinking I was running into a lot of deer sign, because I would find these oak trees that were dropping, and all the leaves would be kind of messed up, and you could tell under specific oak trees that were dropping acorns, the leaves were kind of turned up more than the area around it. Everything around it, you know, the leaves are flat just like everywhere else, but just under these oak trees, the leaves were kind of turned up. My assumption going into it was that it was deer that were coming through and eating the acorns. But after examining a couple acorns, I busted a few of them open. Normally, when you bust open a handful of acorns, 3/4 of them at least on a decent year, or even on an okay year, you know, they're going to be orange inside. They're going to be fresh. But I was busting open green acorns that looked like the inside was just shriveled up. So the acorns were not healthy, probably because of the lack of rain. But I think what I was seeing when I noticed that the leaves were turned up, I'm almost positive most of that sign that I was seeing was actually turkey sign. Because I ended up, the first evening, I hunted in a spot where I saw a lot of those leaves turned up. And within 20 minutes of sitting there, I saw a big old long beard gobbler about 80 yards coming straight up the draw, just like I expected a deer to do. And he saw me and kind of ran off. But either way, big old turkey. The next day, actually, I was walking around doing some still hunting, and I found a turkey feather, and I also found a couple turkey tracks about a mile in. So I think a lot of that sign that I was thinking was deer was actually turkeys.
That may make sense to why you didn't see any deer.
Yeah, because I was on turkey sign.
That's good notes for springtime, though.
Oh, yeah. I definitely want to come back up to that area during springtime, because I was looking into this area that I was hunting, and this area supposedly has one of the highest turkey populations of any public land in Mississippi, and possibly even, you know, the Southeast. Like, it's the highest, one of the highest turkey populations on public land and that we can get to. But one of the things I was noticing about how the deer had been using this terrain was that it seemed like most of the trails were not on top of the ridges. They weren't even, you know, on the ridges. Every one of them seemed to be like 5 feet above the absolute bottom. And all these bottoms is like 60, 80 yards across and dead flat. And most of the old trails that I was seeing that looked like they were very heavily used at one point were, you know, just above those bottoms. So another thing that I found was there was a lot, like on the top of the ridges, there was a lot of old sign that was definitely from last rut, because I found quite a few areas where it looked like there were some old deer rubs that had started healing over, and there were a bunch of scrapes. And what I've heard is that if it's on like the top of ridges, And if it's in like a high pressure area, that's 90% at night. And younger bucks that make, so older bucks make the scrapes and the rubs, and then the younger bucks are going to hit them and afterwards, and most of the time that even that's going to be at night. So I feel like, and their rut's in like mid-December, I think. So, and they've got an archery only season during that time, so I'm probably going to try to make a trip up there and see if I can get it done then. Maybe. Depends on how Alabama's going.
Yeah, if we can get in and have a good early part of the season for Alabama, then it'll definitely be worth going up there and doing it, because you can only kill 3 bucks in Alabama. I think if we can, if you can go back and if I can go along with it, I think it'd be a good idea if we could stay a little bit longer than just one weekend.
Oh yeah, one of the reasons I wanted to do this trip is to really test myself and get out of my comfort zone, because I'm used to going into a spot and as soon as I get there, climbing up a tree and hunting, and that's it. And three things that really tested my comfort zone was, you know, I'm using a saddle now, and I got my saddle in 2 days before I left, and I was using, you know, this is literally the first hunt that I've ever used climbing sticks or a saddle on. I'm used to using a Summit Climber, which are awesome, but after using that saddle, I don't think I'll go back anytime soon. But that was getting me out of my comfort zone, as well as the terrain. I am used to hunting very flat ground and not having to walk super far. Like Saturday, I think I logged like 2.5 miles of just walking around looking for stuff. And it was also up and down. I probably changed elevation, which if you've ever hunted elk, you're probably going to think these are rookie numbers. But I probably changed the elevation. Total elevation change was probably around 400 feet from my truck and back. Maybe even 500. I don't really know. But I changed elevation a lot more than I was used to climbing up and down those hills and ravines and ridges and stuff. But,
well, we live 3 feet above sea level.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. So
I think the highest point in Florida is like 120 feet.
Yeah. But perks of living in the South.
Yeah. But the other thing that was really challenging my comfort zone is, like I said, I'm used to just climbing up a tree and hunting, just not really walking that much. And I was doing a lot of still hunting, so I was trying to be quiet and walking and just spend most of my time looking for deer instead of actually sitting up in a tree and trying to kill something. And I know that was very different from what I'm used to. But I feel like I have a much better grasp on how the deer use that type of terrain.
All right, Zach, so what type of hunting pressure did you encounter when you were there? Was it busy? Was there anybody messing around with you? Did you run into any guys that hunt that area? Luckily, you were hunting on a weekend that there was college football going on, so maybe there was a lot of people that was watching football instead of hunting.
Yeah, so I was my base camp was my sister's apartment, which happens to be in a college town. So there was an SEC team playing, so I'm assuming that most of the guys were out there hunting. But I saw one truck parked by the side of the road Friday morning. And other than that, I never saw another truck, never saw another set of boot prints, nothing. So the pressure was very minimal, but I don't think that the pressure had any effect on the deer. I just feel like the water issue had more effect on the deer. And that guy was also parked near an access point that actually could get to the river, so he probably knew what was up a little bit.
Yeah, it sounds like you needed to take a few bottles of water and out there and just walk around seeing if you can find deer that need something to drink.
I tried that.
He's like, get your Aquafina here.
Then you just start pouring out. Need to just pack in a 5-gallon bucket and pour it out in a puddle. Send one over that.
The deer walk up and get it and take a drink of that. Woo! That's high quality H2O.
Yeah.
But
yeah, it was kind of weird. Another thing that I noticed. So everywhere in Alabama that I've hunted, this was a national forest I was hunting. And I like quadruple checked, because when I first went into this, the area, if you were watching our fishing videos, there's a video called like Lost Footage, and it was actually from a pond in this national forest, and I caught a pretty good bass, so you might want to watch that video. But in that video, I was on the same national forest, but what I didn't realize at the time, and I didn't realize until like 2 or 3 days before I left for the trip, that area was actually a WMA that was highly regulated, and it was a draw permit only. So it was very difficult to actually get in there and hunt legally. You had to draw a permit to hunt it. And I'm assuming there's probably a lot of good deer there, and I might actually try to put in for that. But the area that I was hunting, I quadruple checked it, and it was owned by the U.S. There was no WMAs around, like in that area of this national forest, but there were no markings anywhere that it was a national forest. And I read similar reports from guys on the internet saying that, like, if you don't have Onyx or Hunt Stand or something along those lines to know where the property boundaries are, you'd be totally lost. And I didn't realize that meant there was no markings on the trees.
Did you look into what Mississippi's laws were about hunting and on the, like, the private public land border? Like, you know, like in I think it's North Dakota, that if it's not posted, then you can go on it and hunt.
I didn't see anything about that, but I mean, what I read was the same as Alabama. Like, in Alabama, you're not supposed to hunt. If you're hunting public land, you're not supposed to hunt within 50 yards of private land, and it was the same in Mississippi. So.
Well, that makes sense that they would be, you know, very similar. That's, I mean, North Dakota, that's the first time I've ever heard of that type of law, to where if it wasn't posted, you could go on it.
I was watching a Hushin video last year where they were hunting public land, and there was public land that on Onyx, I think, was showing up as public land. It was like BLM land or something, and there was posted signs across it like some farmer was trying to claim a little bit extra. But
can you blame him?
Not really. But I mean, it was just weird not seeing any actual markings.
So, other than terrain features, like, what else was you looking for when you were out there?
I mean, I was just trying to find anything that looked fresh. I found a few deer tracks that might have been fresh, and it's taking into account, like, when there's a few inches of leaves over the dirt, it's tough to see deer tracks. So I was to a point of not finding fresh sign, to where I was like taking one step at a time, like I was blood trailing deer, just trying to look at the ground and find a track. And this was in, like, you could obviously see a trail that deer used. Like one of the trails I was doing this in was a trail that I was mentioning earlier. It was like 5 feet above the river bottom or the creek bottom. There was like a very obvious trail, and I was just like taking it like an inch at a time, just looking all up and down that trail for fresh tracks. And I think I found one set of doe tracks that was fresh. And I found there was a couple spots I was looking at where I spooked a deer on the first day and walked towards it to just see what it was there for. I'm not even 100% sure if it was a deer. It just sounded like one. But I walked over there, and what I kind of could see I kind of saw like where some greenbrier vines and bullace vines and stuff like that, just some natural browse had been, some of the leaves had been eaten off, it looked like. And none of that looked fresh either. It looked like there were some leaves that had been eaten off, but it also looked like it had kind of healed over. A lot of the acorns that I was seeing were whole, so it wasn't like a lot of times when you see a hot acorn tree, a hot oak tree that's dropping acorns like crazy, you know, you'll see acorns busted open, like looked like you put it in your mouth and just bit down on it and then spit out the shell. You know, that's an easy way to tell if deer are really using the, other than tracks and stuff, if you see the acorns are busted open and the inside's gone, you can tell that there's deer or at least squirrels that are hitting it pretty hard. So I was looking for that and honestly didn't find too much fresh stuff, but I could find, you know, where they had been, it seemed like. I don't know, I just felt like I was just behind the deer the whole weekend.
They were three steps ahead of you?
Yeah, and I was taking two steps back.
All right, so for those that don't know, what type of restriction is there on harvesting deer in Mississippi?
I'm pretty sure I looked at it, you know, obviously I studied it pretty hard, but I've kind of forgotten over the past couple of days. But I know that in the area I was hunting, the deer had to have either a 10-inch inside spread or a 13-inch main beam. And I'm pretty sure you could kill two bucks in that area, and I want to say it was either three or five does, but I don't really remember as far as that goes. But I thought, you know, a spread rule was a bit odd.
A 10-inch spread?
Yeah.
I mean, that's any buck that's going to be a good buck with that by the time they're 2 years old ought to have at least that. So
yeah, I mean, I don't know, it's odd because they're like, as far as a point restriction goes, like there's a lot of places, like in Alabama, if one of your three bucks has to be 3 point or 4 points on one side minimum. So a lot of times with a point restriction, you have a better gauge of the age of a deer. Like, there's not many 2.5-year-old deer that have 4 points on one side. There certainly are some, but it's less deer that are 2.5 years old have 4 points on one side than are 10-inch inside spread or a 13-inch main beam. I feel like I heard that on a podcast one time. But a lot of times, like if you're trying to get better age class of deer in an area, a point restriction or something along those lines would be better than a spread restriction. But it's still something that the QDMA, the Quality Deer Management Association, they recommend that to wildlife management. What's the word, like biologists and stuff like that? I don't know, not biologists. Biologists would know. What's the word I'm looking for? People who do wildlife management at a state level.
DNR officers.
Yeah, DNR. Something like that. I know that the QDMA would recommend some sort of restriction in order to get a higher age class deer in an area, or to at least keep the age classes at a proper proportion. I don't know what that proportion is, but
I don't know. I've seen cow horn spikes with 10.5-inch spreads.
Oh, I have too.
So I guess that's a legal deer.
Yeah, it would be. As long as it's got a, from what I understand, as long as it's got a 10-inch inside spread and or a 13-inch main beam.
Well, quite honestly, if there's a cow horn spike that's got a 10.5-inch spread with a 13-inch main beam, then it is never going to be a big buck, far as horn-wise.
I don't know. It's hard to tell, but I would imagine that deer probably might need to be taken out of the herd.
just from genetic standpoint of looking down the road. If you are on public land, I don't know how much you personally stress genetics and what you want to hunt. But if you're on a private land where you can manage it, then obviously that should be your goal, is to, you know, raise bigger, mature, more deer, you know.
Yeah, I know. I don't know. I just, it's weird. I feel like, you know, the biologists and the people with QDMA, they probably know a lot better than most people do. So they know what they're talking about.
I know that this is a much shorter episode than what we typically load on our podcast. There's not so much you can talk about. But so much you can cover in a non-harvest hunt.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's unsuccessful, because I did learn a lot, I feel like. And I wish I was better at just explaining what I learned, because I don't know how well I really explained it, but there was a lot that I feel like I may have learned, and a lot that I can apply later. But so I'd feel like, as far as that goes, and as far as spending time in the woods before Kay got to,
yeah,
that, you know, that's a success in my book.
Yeah, let's talk about that for a second. I'm freaking jealous that you got to go hunting. I can't, like, I'm sitting here like dying inside. This is like, we're trying to make it to this Tuesday. It's like, drive me insane. I've been just sitting here looking at this picture of these deer that I'm waiting to hunt, and it's just killing me.
Well, the thing is, you were supposed to, or I was hoping that you would be able to come, and then like 4 days, 3 days before I was planning on leaving, my parents said, hey, let's go up and see that game. And I was like, well, I'm going up this weekend. They were like, what? And I was like, I told you this a month ago. So there really wasn't any room for Cade, but for you, Cade, but I don't know.
I don't take up that much room. I sleep on the floor.
I mean, I was sleeping on the couch.
Yeah.
They only had one air mattress, and my parents took that.
I have an air mattress.
We could have made it work, but it would have been cramped.
I'd sleep in the truck if I knew I could go hunting.
Shoot, Friday afternoon, that was the worst part about it, was Friday afternoon, my parents show up at like 10, 10:30, something like that. And I was hoping to get to bed. Like I said, Saturday morning, I woke up at like 3:45, 4 o'clock, something along those lines. And Friday afternoon, or Friday night, I didn't get to even try to lay down and sleep till midnight, because my parents came in and they wanted to visit and everything and whatever.
Your parents that you see literally every day wanted to visit with you?
No, they wanted to visit with my sister.
Yeah, that's when you leave.
Well, I didn't have anywhere to go. I was almost tempted to just drive out to that piece of public and sleep in the truck.
That may be a little sketchy.
Oh, yeah, that area was not far from there, was a very sketchy looking little, very small town.
So is there anything else that you want to kind of add to this? I know this is a shorter episode, but is there any final thoughts on what you would do, not what you would do different, but what, any final thoughts off of what you learned?
I would say there's let me think just a second. So there's two podcasts that taught me a little bit about how to use terrain to my advantage. And I feel like if there was water in the creeks, then it probably would have helped me to my advantage. But listening to the Hunting Public's podcast and watching a lot of their videos on how they use terrain, and then also listening to the Southern Ground Hunting podcast, and then also a little bit of Wired to Hunt with Mark Kenyon. Those three podcasts, they talk sometimes about using terrain to their advantage. And I found a lot of the things that they were saying to be at least somewhat true to this public land. So if you want better explanations than I can really give you, I'd suggest go check them out. Because they know what they're talking about. I'm just sort of using their knowledge.
Yeah, you learn something new every day.
Oh, yeah.
There's things that we can do that I feel like we could do better than them as far as hunting around here, but they get more experience traveling and stuff like that. You gotta definitely use all your resources and being able to learn new terrains and learn how to hunt specific areas and specific things in a specific way.
Yeah.
So
that's one thing I really enjoy about how media has changed the hunting industry as far as like social media, like YouTube and Instagram, Facebook, podcast, stuff like that. Because, you know, nowadays you have so much information on so many different styles of hunting and so many different, techniques to use to try to harvest a deer. Like, I feel like now you could watch 8 or 10 YouTube videos and walk in the woods and on your first time ever walking into the woods have success. May not kill something, but you could probably see something, you know, just by learning from all the different social media outlets that are out now.
Yeah, the word success is very substantial to the person that's using it.
You know, in my opinion, if I get a chance to go out in the woods and I have a good time, that's a successful trip, especially if I learn something along the way.
Yeah, no doubt. But I know this is definitely a shorter episode. It's probably, I don't know at this moment, but it's probably around that 30, 35 minute mark. But I really appreciate y'all listening. And make sure, if you hadn't already, subscribe. Subscribe to this on iTunes or follow us on Spotify. That we're on all major podcast platforms. But
give us a 5-star review even if you didn't enjoy this podcast.
Yeah. Check out our earlier ones. I feel like our earlier ones and our next one's better. This is you want to talk about things like this because every little thing taken is to where you can build it and to learn more knowledge and get more successful. Also, we do this stuff to where if we are struggling or if we can't remember anything about what we said about going to a particular area, then we can come back and listen to this podcast to help us remember and log everything. But also check out our YouTube channel. We are doing a 500 sub giveaway. And what it takes to enter that is you go on our YouTube channel and if you're subscribed, if you're not, press subscribe. Screenshot proof that you are subscribed and inbox us on either our Instagram and or our Facebook page. And that puts you into entering the 500 sub giveaway, which is a free dozen Black Eagle Zombie Slayers that we will mail directly to you. We are really excited about this hunting season. Me and Zach both got some good bucks on camera, working on figuring them all out and stuff like that. But just stay tuned. We are going to have a podcast. Hopefully every Friday is when we try to upload them. And I do have a guest I'm working on scheduling for a... Sorry, guys, about that sound. That was this video finally got exported.
Yeah, the video for this hunting trip we're talking about now.
Yeah.
And another thing, real quick, if you watch the video, I kind of show a lot of the terrain features in on the screen, and I show you kind of some of the things I was looking for, and you can get a visual from that, too.
Yeah. But I am working on getting a guest on this show for the next episode, hopefully. If not the next, it will be the one after that. And he's going to be very interesting, very interesting to listen to, talking about scents. So I do appreciate y'all listening. Like I said, subscribe, check out our YouTube channel, DM us that proof of subscription to Instagram or Facebook. And always remember to live life 25 feet high.